Thank you.
Very good. Then, and when and so that will be the last thing we need to prove to complete the uniqueness of this one of the module that don't see this one. Okay, so to prove this. The proof is by induction on alpha 1 plus j alpha n. Again, even before I start the induction, I'll prove that m is equal to n. And that's the factory proof that the alpha is equal to the beta. Okay, so right. So how do we do the? So let me call M this one. Okay. So again, the strategy is to produce something intrinsically from M that doesn't depend on the composition, and I do that, and then express it in terms of the composition that I do, because it is intrinsically acting the same. So let's look at the following module P times M, which by definition looks so that P times M is the module Px where X is an M. So all the modules of P. So let's figure out what this is. So that's going to be the interesting thing. I want to look at Pm, and I also want to look at M on Pm. So what is this guy? So this is a direct sum of multiplying an element in here by P means multiplying its coordinate by P. Right? So the what you're going to get is Pr mod P3 alpha 1 direct term P R P3 alpha M. And what is this? This is the multiple of P in this ring, right? So if you look at one of these components, this means the multiple of P, well, this is the module, but just being the multiples of P in this ring. So this is the idea generated by P in here. So when you do the quotient, and what I want to look at first, when you do the quotient, when you mod a module which is a direct sum like this by a direct sum like that, what you're going to end up doing is modding out each component, right? Because what's the coset of this by that is something that the two things are equivalent if the corresponding, so two things are equivalent module of Pm in here if the corresponding coordinates are all divisible by P, right? Because the this guy here is the thing that has all the coordinates divisible by P. So M on Pm is the, you're going to be looking at coordinates mod P. So what you're going to get is R mod P. And that, if you do it with the alpha, but if you do it with the beta, so I argue with the alpha, right? But if this is isomorphic to that, I could argue the same way with the beta. So this is also isomorphic to R mod P, direct sum of M. So this is argument with the alphas. Okay, so this is an isomorphism of R modules, but this guy here also R mod T modules, right? That the R module structure induces an R mod T module structure, but when you multiply, this is a group, right? And then the module structure means how you multiply by a thing in here by the amount of R. When you multiply something by the amount of R, you're going to be doing it mod T. So the R module structure is the same as an R mod T module structure. So these two things. So this is R mod T. And is an R mod T module. So if the two things, and moreover, if they are isomorphic as R modules, they would be isomorphic as R mod T modules. Because the multiplication is the same, multiplication by R mod T modules. The fact that the multiplication in mod B is the multiplication. Multiply first and reduce mod B is the same thing. Reduce mod B. And if, so we're going down, if isomorphic with R mod T to the end as R modules, then they are isomorphic as R mod T modules. It's really not a matter to, it's just a matter of writing down the definitions of what it means. This is really true. Now, what is R mod T? R mod T is a, so R is a PID, P is a prime. Now, yeah, these primes are maximal. So this is a field. This is just vector spaces, it's isomorphism of vector spaces. And now we're talking about dimension, and dimension is well-defined. So, actually, I did prove that dimension rank was well-defined for free modules. You can also think of this as free modules over R mod T. You don't even need to know that R mod T is here. Just that these things are free modules. As R mod T modules, they are free. They're not free modules as R modules, because P times 1 is 0. So they're not free as R modules, but they are free as R mod T modules. Since they are free as R mod T modules, they are vector spaces, or even vector spaces. So the quality of this drop of dimensions, the length of the direct sum is the same as follows from the one. Now I want to do the induction part, I want to go back to this guy. So what I want to say is that I want to look at this thing. Which is, the general form of the semantic, or the semantic of this guy. And I claim that such a thing is isomorphic to R mod P to the alpha minus 1 as a normal. So the multiples of E in here are isomorphic as an module to that. Now, and the math is kind of natural. You take the, if you have an x here, then x is equal to py. Right? By definition, the element here is a multiple of p from some y in R1 to the alpha. Now, this y might not be unique, but how can there be two different y's giving you the same x? If py1 equals py2, that implies that py1 minus y2 is 0. But what does it mean 0 here? It means that it's 0 modulo p2 to alpha, which means that p2 to alpha divides this thing here. But by any factorization, it means that p to the alpha minus 1 must divide this. Right? But if you look at the power of p dividing y1 minus y2, if you add an extra p, you get something if you do by p to the alpha. So, that implies that y1 minus y2 would be 0 modulo p to the alpha minus 1. So it means that if you have two y's that give you the same x, they are the same modulo p to the alpha minus 1. Which means that if I take this and map to y, in here, it is well defined. Right? Any two y's that give you the same x will be the same in here. So this map now is a well-defined map. And going this way, which is easier than y, I have to be a little careful because, you know, this is not an element in here. So what I do is I send to py tilde, where y tilde is any element of R that reduces to y and not q to the other one. So you can sort of do the same thing. Take a y here is a residue class mod q to the alpha minus 1. You take a representative in R and map it multiplied by p. So any two representatives will differ by a multiple q to the alpha minus 1. When you multiply by p, you get two things that differ by a multiple q to the alpha, so it's 12 minus. And then it's exactly this map there. Our module homomorphisms are interested to each other. So you establish it as a model. And what does that mean for us over there? Or here. It means that Pm is isomorphic to R to P to the alpha 1 minus 1 direct sum R to the P to the theta 1 alpha n minus 1, but is also, if you use the betas, isomorphic to R mel P to the theta 1 minus 1 plus R to P to the alpha theta n minus 1 from M. Obviously, I'm ready to go to the end of the and now we can apply the induction. Right? The exponents went down. The sum of the exponents go down. So by induction.
I'll buy them as long as you just pick up another one.
Structure, so that theorem says that
i.e. fire engineering. So fire engineering is
so fire engineering also means the same as the group theory thing. So fire engineering is the model. Is the same as the fire engineering in the sense of group theory. A presentation of the finite number of terms. I don't think so. Z to the R, Zx from Z to A1. Now this is just like the, you know, the simple groups of order A1 and AM, where, you know, and you can normalize if you want to normalize, so, you know, if you normalize the A1, AI greater equal to 0, positive, or 15 to 1, A1 minus 15 to 1. Yeah. Now, because in the integers there are only two units, 1 and minus 1, when you force them to be positive, then you identify them uniquely. So, this decomposition is actually unique in the strict sense. R, M, and the A's are uniquely the same. So, that's a very explicit description, you know, you can't ask for anything else. I mean, there's all the hidden groups trying to get hidden groups like that. So, for example, if one can conclude that every finite integer in the hidden group is finitely presented, you only need a finite number of relations to describe it. What are the relations? You have generators, you have, well, you have R generators here, so for each copy of G, you get a, you use a 1, so z to the I is z to the r. First you use a 1, and you use a 1 here also, but this is going to give you R plus M generators. And the relations are what? That the generators commute to each other. So you're going to have to, you know, for each pair of generators, you put the relations and commute to each other, so that gives you a finitely presented arena group. And then you have that the relation that the generator A1 times this generator is 0, etc. AM times this generator. That's the representation of our. So you can turn this description into a finite presentation of our so of course finite Abelian groups don't have this. So that's the very explicit description of finite Abelian groups. Every finite group is finite generated. I always have one. Will do. So that here is a beautiful description, simple description of all finite Abelian groups. So by every finite Abelian group is a direct sum of finite figure groups. So for example, you can start, I don't know, I mean, it's kind of becomes shitty. I mean, it's not much help you can say, but you can look, for example, you want all the groups with 16 elements. All the Abelian groups with 16 elements. What can you do? You can have Z mod 16, Z mod 2 plus Z mod 8, Z mod 2 plus Z mod 4 plus Z mod the thing I can multiply to 16. The order, yeah. So the finite. So this is finite. This order is finite to 0, and the order is a 1. So, oops, that's too many. 4. Okay. So. G mod 2 plus G mod 8, G mod 4, so G mod 2 plus G mod 2, G mod 2, and G mod 4. Am I missing anything? it could be one of the eggs that to, then you have this egg that to divide the order, so
16 eggs for 2, you can have 16 as a secret, if you have an 8 and you have 2 left, you have a 4, you could have either another 4 or 2 twos, and if you're going to have 8 plus 4, you're going to have 7.
These are all the abelian groups of all the 16.
It's more if you only have the power of one, and if they're more two primes, then you know the automatically decomposes the direct cell of the things of order. Okay. One prime, the power of one prime is possible.
That I want to talk about is the case where R is polynomials of X where K is a field. So, if you recall, a KX module is the same as a vector space over K together with a linear transformation of X. So, R module equals K vector space plus a linear which gives the action of X. Okay, so yeah, here we have the same description. It's a free part plus a so-called constant part. So we're and finally generated our model. Then M level markers to use the class to be explicit. And again, we have a very natural way of identifying, if you have elements of KX module units, there's a natural way of picking a representative, which is picking monic representative. So R M is equal to 0, AI monic polynomials with A1 bar A and M. And when you say that AI is a monic, you identify the uniqueness because the units are the known zero elements of K, so if you multiply an AI by a unit, you have more units. Once you put monic, then it's just completely unique. Looking at things about our modules, and then I said, our module is this. The first thing we start is this. And let's say we start with a vector space of the kind we are used to, higher dimensional vectors. So linear transformation is just amazing. So suppose we are giving here a higher dimensional K vector space, A to the M. Prototype, I have the eyes on one case in the end, and the linear transformation, and the linear transformation, okay. So that's amazing, and by amazing. So I want to apply that classification to that. So, first of all, is it finally generated as a corrigatic? So KN, so now KN is a KX module with X and F and C. And it's actually finitely generated. Why is it finitely generated? Because, you know, KN has a finite basis, as the case vector space, and this basis for every element is in a combination of the elements of this finite basis with coefficients in K, in particular the ideal combinations of this basis coefficients in K, KF. Just don't use X. So, this is a finitely generated thing. So it's one of those. And the K module is exactly one of these. But it's more because this guy here, if R is positive, this is polynomials. Polynomials can be of any degree. That means that as a K vector space, they are interdimensional. The ring of polynomials as a vector space over K is interdimensional. Because, you know, one X is red, so on. You have independent elements, that means they're infinite. So if you have a positive R, this guy here is infinite. So to get finite dimensional, so K to the N is isomorphic to KN modulo A1. So there you go. There is no free part. There's just a discussion part. To make very explicit what does this mean in terms of the matrix, in terms of the linear transformation. First of all, when you decompose a vector space into direct sum, what you're doing is you're making it, you know, you choose a basis for each of the summands and make a basis of the total space by using a basis of the summand. What happens to your matrix is you decompose the matrix into blocks. Okay, so the matrix T, so if you choose basis for each of the KX modulo AI and make a basis for KN out of them, you get the linear transformation T is going to break up into a block matrix T1, T2, Tm. Where Ti are mixed and zero are mixed. So what are the dimensions here? So the dimension of KX modulo AI. So what is this? This is polynomials modulo polynomial of some degree. When you take if you take a polynomial and divide by AI, you get the polynomial remainder of degree less than the degree of AI. So every element here can be represented by a polynomial degree less than the degree of AI. And uniquely so. So the dimension here is just the degree of AI. And as a K vector with basis and has an actual basis 1x, x is the degree of AI minus 1. So every element here can be represented as a combination of those guys. So what we have here. So M has to be M is equal to TI is a degree AI by degree AI matrix. Is an M by M matrix. So M is equal to sum of degree of AI. And how does TI look like? I think I've done this calculation before. Our linear transformation is acting as multiplication by X. So how does X act on that basis? X times 1 is X. X times X is X squared. X times X is the degree of AI minus 1 minus 2 is X to the degree of AI minus 1. And X to the degree of X times X to the degree of AI minus 1. Well, this is X to the degree of AI. And if you write X, if you write AI as, that means to have a name for the degree of AI, because otherwise you're going to get very ugly. So let's say you sum of J from 0 to DI, so I mean it's called DI the degree of AI, or alpha IJ X to J. So this is going to be minus alpha 0 minus alpha 1 X, alpha 0 I, alpha I 0, alpha I 1, alpha I, alpha D, I minus 1, alpha I, DI minus 1, and so this is the so, each of these matrices is going to look like so what does it look like? It looks like I think it's something like this. Minus alpha 0 1 0 minus alpha 1 0 1 minus alpha 2. That is half of the transfer. So we want something that is DI by DI. So. And also, so what's the last? Yeah, and also DI. So if you multiply by the so 1, 0, 0, 0, so that you get 0 by 1, 1, 2. You multiply by this guy, you're going to get the third one, and so on. And if you take the last one, then you're going to get the first one, it's going to be minus alpha 0, minus alpha 1. You're going to go 0, 0. And then you're the 1, 1. I think that's how the matrix looks like. So it's the last column and the sub-diagonal here is the only thing that have things that are not zero. The sub-diagonal have ones, except for here you have whatever coefficients you have, and you have those guys. So there's a very different description of TI on this matrix. And that's what's called the rational canonical form of the problem. Is the composing. There's something called the Gordon canonical form, which is what you get if you're working over the real complexes. Now you have to use the special properties of the reducible elements to put it. If you apply just an arbitrary field, and that's about all you can say. But I want to get a consequence of this fact. I want to prove a theorem, a classical theorem in linear algebra, which I'm sure you've mentioned. I don't know if
in the house, but teacher actually had to test some proven. And when they got in class, but the test was clear to Katie Hammer and Zero. And then you look at it as a function of lambda, it's a polynomial. It's a polynomial. That's pretty good, that's not possible here. Yeah. Call it a characteristic polynomial of T. And the content of the change of Hamilton theorem is that then if you substitute T into its characteristic polynomial, so this belongs to K of lambda, M of T. So if you substitute the matrix, so the polynomial is some quantum coefficients of coefficient in lambda coefficients. So you replace all the power of lambda by power of T. The range of the evaluating the polynomial of the ring as long as an element of a ring and one of the coefficients of the polynomial are inside the ring. So that's the statement of the Cayley-Hamilton theorem. Let's prove it. So when you have a matrix which decomposes in blocks like this, and you compute so if you take a matrix like this and you compute lambda identity minus t, what are you going to get? You're going to get lambda identity minus t1, lambda identity minus tm, where these identities here are the identities of the right side. Okay, so if you have a matrix in blocks, then this matrix lambda I minus T also has blocks. So when you compute the determinant, alright, but this like the size is when you compute the determinant of a block matrix, you just need to compute the determinant of the block and try them out. The problem is I minus T I. So computing the determinant of a block matrix is easy, it's just the product of the determinant of the blocks. So what do we want to prove? We want to prove that this polynomial in T is the zero matrix, which means that this polynomial in T acts trivially on KTN. So I could zero on KTM, that's what this Cayley-Hamilton theorem said. So we want to prove that, you know, this thing acts trivially on this thing. And it's enough to show what? It's enough to show that this is a product. So to prove that the product acts trivially is just enough to show that one term of the product acts as it. So it's enough to show that each of these factors is zero in the corresponding thing. So we just have to prove the Cayley-Hamilton theorem in each fact. So it's enough to show. So that FJ is the characteristic polynomial. TJ, so it's the factor corresponding in
caught in JX more than
J with an action of X in there than FJ or TJ in here.
Now, here's an explicit form for TJ. So if you put in, if you complete a characteristic for lambda, so you take lambda times the identity minus this, you're going to get lambda times the identity here. I don't want to do all the calculations because we don't have time. But then it's sort of like a simple linear algebra exercise. You start doing row reductions to compute the determinant of the characteristic for lambda of TJ. You can look it up in a book, I'm sure you can get it. And then a calculation shows no surprises, Fj is a j. There's only one polynomial that's kind of floating around in relation to this vector space, is aj itself. So Fj is just aj. And certainly AJ acts trivially here because this is more than AJ. AJ multiplication by AJ is zero in this one. That's what it all says. So, AJ acts as zero. So that's what we're saying. And let me just make a couple of remarks. So if you go back to this formula here, the characteristic polynomial of the whole matrix D is A1AM. So the characteristic polynomial of this block is the corresponding AJ characteristic polynomial of the whole thing is A1AM. But that comes out of the proof. There's another thing called the minimal polynomial, which is the smallest polynomial that annihilates the matrix. Smallest degree polynomial that annihilates the matrix. And there's a characteristic polynomial. The minimal polynomial. So, what is it? The smallest polynomial that acts trivially in here is the generator of the ideal, right? Because the polynomials that act trivially on this module are exactly the elements of this ideal. And that the smallest degree element of the ideal, except for zero, is AJ. That's how we define AJ. So the minimal polynomial in each of these guys is AJ. But A1 divides A2 divides and so on divides AM. So the thing that annihilates all the commands simultaneously is AM. So minimal polynomial in C is AM. In algebra, you learn about characteristics of the minimal polynomial. It's sort of mysterious what's happening now. Everything should be clear. And the characteristic polynomial is equal to the minimal polynomial exactly when the vector space is cyclic. It's a quote. It's just one command. And that's when so it's there's a basis formed by all these one elements I'm under there. Yeah. That's the case in the first one. Again, you see why, for example, if the characteristic polynomial is square 3, the characteristic polynomial is equal to the minimal polynomial. But since each of these guys divides an x, if you have more than one term in this product, it's not going to be square 3. So all sorts of nice things about linear algebra, which usually don't get done.
should be an algebra.
Is it always irreducible?
No.
No.
Am? Or I asked you something wrong, but yeah, am, no. You know, you just take something like this. So you can make whatever you want. So you can take your favorite polynomial.
X minus 1, X minus 2, X minus 3.
So this guy is a three-dimensional vector space, and the characteristic polynomial of the multiplication by X is exactly this guy. So every polynomial can be the characteristic polynomial of an integer summation. Every polynomial can be the minimal polynomial of an integer summation. There is no restriction whatsoever on this. Except being one, but it's not one, I mean.
Junior algebra.
Okay, so there's no homework for next week.